everybody. We're back with another one of those What Did We Watch This Month episodes. Last month was really short because Brian and I were binging Game of Thrones, but that's over with. So now I've got like 12 things on my fucking list. So we're going to be doing a lot of doubling up on this one. So I'll kick it off, I guess. I'm going to do this one real quick. I watched two movies that I'm not going to say too much about, because I'll say that they are firmly in the stay tuned category of horror movie night. Psycho Cop Returns, which was suggested to me by one of our listeners, Tom, and Scream Factory sent me the Blu-ray for Man's Best Friend. Both are something.
They are something.
Yeah. And Ally Sheedy in Man's Best Friend.
Whatever happened to her?
She did Man's Best Friend. But yeah, nothing like a very awkward cut between a real dog and a prosthetic dog that can swallow cats whole.
You're kind of selling it for me.
Yeah. Oh, you would love it. It's something. And then Psycho Cop Returns. It's from the guy who wrote and directed Invisible Maniac, and it shows. So that's all I've got to say about those two. Who wants to do it next?
Who wants to do it next?
I guess I'll jump on. I don't know how I'm going to bunch a lot of these together, but I'm going to start by saying I watched Lorena, the Jordan Peele docuseries about Lorena and John Wayne Bobbitt. And Boy, was it a fucking watch, man. Like, Jordan Peele. I don't know if he directed or produced it, but his name is attached to it. But it was so well done.
Yeah, dude, that Twilight Zone trailer got me something excited.
Yeah, they did such a good job of, like, you start watching this show and the first episode ends and you're like, this bitch is crazy. And then it immediately, the following three episodes, she was like raped and abused by him, and like, you're like 100% voting for her. And it just shows, like, no, don't get me wrong, our country has a long way to go, but we have definitely made some minor improvements from the 90s of how, like, it's, I felt like I was watching a documentary based in the 70s. You know, it was like, are women being treated fairly, or are they being raped and beaten by their husbands? We brought in a bunch of old white men to discuss. What are your guys' thoughts? And they're like, no, they're not. I'm like, the fuck? I was alive for this. This is insane. That, and then I'll just plug no ties to it, but just trying to burn through this list. Watch The Florida Project for the first time, and I fucking loved it. If you are someone that needs like a movie with like a huge plot and storyline, it's not real. It's like not the movie for you. It's very the way, way back, eighth grade, where it's just kind of a movie that exists in a way. You know, there's obviously a storyline and a plot in this and those other two movies, but it's more just a
snapshot of people's lives. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a feel good film, you know? I really enjoyed it, and I didn't watch it when it first came out because I heard it from a lot of people. It sucked, but I enjoyed it personally. Those are my two.
All right. So I have to tell you guys about the time that I got super sick this month and just burnt through so many MCU films. Well, not really. So I had some dental surgery done, and that I found out after taking the medication for the pain that I...
My medication.
that I cannot take codeine. It really fucks me up.
Me neither.
But anyway, so I spent 12 hours writhing in pain. And so in that time, I watched... These are all rewatches. Infinity War, Iron Man 2. Oh, then I watched The Glow Doc. And then I watched G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra.
Oh.
And that was the first and last time watching G.I. Joe Rise of Cobra, because it's not as fun as I wanted it to be. It's like very Street Fighter, in that somebody knew they were making a funny movie, but not enough people to really make it a fun watch.
Yeah, I feel like my memory of that was that it felt like The Rock was one of the only people that understood what he was in. and like everyone else was taking it way too seriously.
Wait.
But it's been forever.
Wait, Rise of Cobra,
Wait, is that one with The Rock?
No.
I don't know.
G.I. Joe.
Oh, no, I'm thinking of G.I. Joe Retaliation. Yeah.
Yeah, this one has, oh, God. Hold on. I know the people's names. Hold on.
Yeah, they all kind of blend together, those G.I. Joe movies.
Dennis Quaid, Channing Tatum. Channing Tatum. How many of them are there?
More than there should be. I think there's at least three or four.
What? Looks like I got some work to do. Oh, Joseph Gordon-Levitt is in it too, which I think is really funny.
JGL.
I think that guy he has all that 10 Things I Hate About You money. So he's like, I'm just going to go do weird movies from now on. That's why we get, you know, Ron John, which fucking rocked. Such a good movie. And then, he's got that Third Rock from the Sun money. And that's
why. I was going to say, he's got the Third Rock from the Sun money. Where he can just do whatever the fuck he wants. So he's doing stuff like Brick and The Lookout and all those other movies that were fun. And Don Juan. Don Juan.
I think it was either the day before or the day after I was ill. I rewatched Ant-Man and the Wasp with Megan, and she enjoyed it. And I fucking love it. Just kind of getting ready for Captain Marvel to come out in a couple weeks. And then we got to wait, 2 months? And then we get Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited. I'm excited for Endgame for sure. And I loved Ant-Man and the Wasp. I thought that was a really fun movie.
I think that Ant-Man is one of the most fun of the MCU film concepts, because the first Ant-Man is a heist movie. It's basically Ocean's 11 with superpowers, which is awesome. And then, plus Paul Rudd can do no wrong. I love Paul Rudd. And then Ant-Man and the Wasp, it's really great because there's no real bad guy. You know, because I think that whoever wrote Ant-Man and the Wasp, I don't want to say it was the Russos because I don't think it was, but whoever wrote it took all the things that people criticized about the first Ant-Man, which is that Yellowjacket is a shitty fucking villain. And they were like, you know what? You hated the first villain. We're not going to have one.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. Yeah.
It's a really solid movie. And the MCU, I feel like the latest batch over last year of MCU movies could do no wrong. There wasn't really a bad one.
The last actually bad MCU movie, in my opinion, is Thor Dark World. Everything else has been amazing. I mean, I didn't really like Iron Man 3, and I won't ever watch Thor Dark World or Iron Man 3 again. But I'm pretty sure that Thor Dark World came out after Iron Man 3.
Yeah, so it definitely did. Definitely did.
Consider that the last of the bad MCU movies. And even a bad MCU movie is visually... If when I was sick, if I could have watched Thor Dark World, I would have.
Yeah.
If it was streaming.
So I'll do these two... Probably. So I've been starting my watch of 2019 movies and getting... started building the list. And here's two movies that are guaranteed to not be in my top 10. They were definitely... two films that I was very underwhelmed by, but I really didn't expect to have much of a love for them. One was kind of disappointing. It was Isn't It Romantic? Which I love rom-coms. It's from the director of Final Girls. It's very similar to the concept of Final Girls. So I was like, maybe the trailers just aren't making it look so great, but it's maybe 5 minutes of a really cool short slammed into an hour and a half movie. It's Amy Schumer? Disappointed.
No, it's Rebel Wilson.
No, Rebel Wilson, yeah. So I was kind of disappointed by that. But right now, my least favorite movie of the year was The Prodigy, which I went into expecting it to be bad anyway. But this was one of those ones where when I go to see a movie in the theaters, I shut off my phone. I disconnect from everything. And all I wanted to do was turn on my phone and see how much time was left. I was just so over it. It's so boring. It's got dog death, which is always a negative. And the premise, so the movie, the trailers set you up to think that this movie is just a crazy kid movie. You know what I mean? Evil super genius movie, maybe the beginnings of a supervillain, something like that. Right out the gate, the movie begins and you realize that it is a killer reincarnation movie. So
I don't know. Did you see, were there multiple trailers for it? Because I got that from the trailer.
See, I didn't. So the movie starts off with a serial killer being killed at the exact same time that a baby's born. And then it's just a series of, like, they keep stressing, this isn't possession. He's not possessed. He's the reincarnation of this person.
But, like, wouldn't that, how would that work? Does that mean that the soul only touches a body when it comes out of a vagina?
Yeah, I look.
Take
I,
that, pro-life fuckers.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just like, it's so boring. It's so drawn out. It tries to go with like a dark ending, and you're just kind of like, I don't care. Like, I don't
and there
care.
Are people on
Nobody
Instagram.
Cares, Sean. Nobody cares.
But yeah,
it, a lot of people it's on Instagram were loving it, though.
Yeah, I know. And I'm sure that'll be a movie. Like, was it? Sorry. Was it as bad as like Slenderman
no.
or The Winchester last year? No, but it's like it's that movie that I'm gonna forget. Right now, it's my least favorite movie of the year, but I've only seen 8 films so far from 2019.
It's been
so,
fucking 8 weeks, and you're like, I've only seen 8 films.
I've only seen 8 of the films. So who knows? I'm sure that there'll be something way more egregious that comes out, but like, it's gonna be that movie that I forgot existed by like April. You know what I mean? Like, it's just
there. It's the 2019 version of Possession of Hannah Grace.
Exactly. Like, it's just there. All right, Brian.
So, do I want to go with Dog Death or Bad Movie?
Go with Bad Movie.
To tie in. I'm going to go with Bad Movie. So I watched two. I watched, last night, me and Jade watched Don't Knock Twice, or as I like to call it, Don't Watch Once. We have fun on this podcast.
That joke sucked.
Dude. Oh, knocked it out of the park.
I'm gonna put 3 on this list. Don't Knock Twice was very blah of a movie.
Is it a horror movie? What is it?
Yes, it's a horror movie about this woman. A witch, quote unquote, that if you knock on her door, she's gonna come and get you.
So Candy.
And yeah, two kids knock on her door. One kid very, very easily gets taken, and the second kid, it's a battle. I
That's
couldn't wait for it to
movie?
Be over. Yeah,
two
she,
kids.
It's two kids, and then there's a lot of like plot twists that aren't really good. It's not worth watching. We watched it on Netflix, and I knew it was going to be bad, but Jade seemed really excited for the jump scare, so I watched it for her, and I
at least she didn't
smirked.
Pay for it.
Yeah. Next, we watched, which I knew wasn't going to be good, but I didn't expect it to be as painful and unwatchable. And I watched the whole thing, which was Traffic, that just came out. The couple where
there was that, and there was Breaking In, that both kind of felt like they were the same movie.
Yeah,
and Us looks like it's just going to be a way better version of both of those movies.
Traffic had no pacing. For like, and I'm already like, it's hard to please me with a home invasion movie, mm-hmm. and this like knocked it out of the park with just like such a bad movie, terrible pacing, didn't make sense. And the next one, I got a quarrel with some of the people on the Facebook page. Down, the new Into the Dark movie, was so average and. She's so hateable where it's like, I'm not a guy that like likes to pick apart movies. I try not to be that guy.
You just want to, you want to exist with them while you watch.
Yeah. Them. Yeah. I'm not like the guy that's like, oh, what is she doing running up the stairs? Like I get you react differently when you're scared, and I apologize for some spoiler alerts, but so when she finds out who the killer is 3 times, She implies like, go fuck yourself. I'm going to call the cops on you. So then he holds her and tries to kill her. And then she's like, wait, trust me. And then she gets like an inch away from him and is like, ha, fuck you. And then he catches her again. Like, it's just like, just play the role. Just wait till you're safe and call the cops. Stop reminding him that you're going to turn on. It was just,
why
infuriated.
Why would he let her go?
Because it was like a stalker type deal where she's like, oh yeah, we could. You know what? You're right. We should be together. And he's like, really? How do I know that you're not just doing what you did last time? She's like, I promise I'm not. And he's like, okay. And then he's like, well, you could take a few steps this way. She's like, ha ha, gotcha. Not going to be with you. Calling the cops now. And he's just like, well, get over here then. And it's like, oh, now we're in another problem. It was, it wasn't the worst of the End of the Dark, but it definitely, I saw it posted on the page and I reminded that it came out and everyone was like, probably the best one. And I was like super excited. And it was a snooze fest. Big old snooze fest for me. So those are my three shit movies.
All right, Scotty.
All right. So, where are we at? What do we got? I have to tell you guys the best fucking experience of the last month easily, visually was Pen 15 on Hulu. Holy shit.
I still have to watch it.
Oh man. You're going to burn through those 10 episodes in like a weekend. It's so we only let ourselves do max two a night. And it was hard. It took us all week, you know, it was like two a night to get through to the 10 episodes. But
yeah,
especially watching it with Jade. If you are a man with a female significant other, I feel like you will get more benefit from watching it with a woman who was a teenager in the around the millennium, like around 2000, because it's set in 2000. Mm-hmm. Because it's like I got the nostalgia of some of the cultural things, but I didn't get the girl teen cultural references. And Megan was like, oh my God, this is so real. This is so exactly like my experience at that time. So the concept is that these two female comedians, who are hilarious, by the way, they're like 30 in real life. They're playing themselves as 13-year-olds on the show. And so the first episode, you're like, oh my God, these 30-year-old women are playing 13-year-olds around a bunch of 13-year-olds. But then you lose that and you're like seeing them as 13-year-olds. It's really wild. And they're so funny. Like they're you can tell that they wrote it because they and that they lived it because it's all about like their posture and their physical reactions to things, and just it's so realistic. It's basically like if Freaks and Geeks was more authentic. This is like the most authentic teen thing I've ever seen. I'm not saying it's the most charming or the best, but it's the most realistic. It's just basically like going back in time and watching a slightly scripted version of what life was like for the junior high kids in 2000.
All right.
It's so
good.
Yeah, it's
definitely on my list. I'm super excited to watch it now.
Yeah, you should definitely put it high on your list because it is so good. It's just so fucking good, man.
We're out of shows too, so I probably, as soon as I get back from this trip, I'm going to start it.
All right, I'm going to tackle the two kids movies that I saw so far in 2019. One that was great and one that was pretty good. So The Kid Who Would Be King did really bad at the box office. I think it was like out of theaters within 2 weeks, but it was a ton of fun. It was a total 80s sorcery film mixed with Goonies. It's written and directed by the guy who wrote Attack the Block. Like, it's just got that 80s kids movie vibe going throughout it. It's a little long. It's a little drawn out. Like, it's not going to ever make my top 10 of the year, but it was fun. The other movie that I saw that was great was Lego Movie 2, the second one, which also I think did really bad at the box office. But just if you love the first Lego movie, you're going to love the second one. It's so funny. It's so ridiculously meta throughout the whole experience.
I feel like that's all the movies.
Well, Chris Pratt voices two characters in this one. So he voices the main character and then he voices a character named Rex Danger, who's literally just a parody of Chris Pratt. So like Rex Danger is described as a Star Guardian Raptor training cowboy, which is just like three of his big movie roles, and then describes himself as yeah, I'm a whole bunch of solid muscle that was just secretly hidden under baby fat for 10 years. So it's like just very on the nose with like, this is Chris Pratt voicing Chris Pratt, like the whole movie.
Well, here's one thing. Does Chris Pratt's personal belief systems and life decisions really like make it hard for you to enjoy his movies now? Because it does for me.
I mean, I don't mind that he's like super hyper weirdly religious, but I don't know how I feel about, I don't know.
It's less about the religiosity, which is weird, but more about like he's done some really questionable shit in his relationships.
Yeah, that I don't, especially because I really thought that him and Anna were like a power couple. You know what I mean? Like,
how it's one of those do you not like, love Anna Faris?
That's what I mean. I like, it's like, oh, they're so perfect for each other. Like, it's kind of like in a weird fucked up way when, like, I remember there's only two times that like a celebrity breakup besides them, I was like, no, they were supposed to last. Was like, weirdly enough, was
Miley Cyrus and the homeless kid.
Yep. No. Wait, no. I keep Courtney Cox and David Arquette.
Like, I know.
Like, I was just like, man, like, they always had good chemistry in the Scream movies, and they seemed like they always were having fun when you'd see them out and about. So that one hurt. And it was before anybody really knew or cared about either one of them. But like, I remember being in college, finding out that James Gunn and Pam from The Office had a divorce. And I was just like, no, which he joked. I remember I was following him on Twitter and he posted a thing that was like, list of tattoos that I've considered getting since divorce, and one of them was Jim and Pam forever. And apparently they remain good friends. Like, she helped him a lot with Super and like helped get him Dwight from The Office to be in that movie, so like they weren't like a bad breakup, but it still bummed me out because they were just two really weird funny people where I'm like, well, how, if they can't make it work, what hope do I have?
I'll tell you,
maybe
I'll tell
not
you what,
being
dude.
Famous, that helps a lot.
Yeah. You saying that brings to mind, if John Krasinski and Emily Blunt don't last, that would bother me a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
But they have like three kids together and are incredibly in love.
And they're like, if it wasn't for them, there's so many times where I'm like, I don't see any celebrity couples. I don't see monogamy being a thing in any celebrity relationship, but I feel like I see it with them.
Yeah. There's a few, it's weird because there's like the ones like Sarah Michelle Gellar and Freddie Prinze are still going,
yeah,
all these years later, but they also both are like, hey, let's step away from the spotlight. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
she just wants like, to be like, mom and like,
yeah, they're like, we made our money.
Yeah. did she, maybe she like does an Instagram or something and probably gets money from that, but I don't know.
Yeah, she makes money on Buffy, and he like does writing. He because like he was like one of the head writers for WWE for like 10 years.
What?
Like, just
that has blown my fucking mind.
Yeah, he's a huge wrestling buff, so he like wrote for WWE. He was like one of the directors for WWE for a while. Like, so they found a way to like keep making money in Hollywood while not being front and center. And I feel like that sometimes is the only way to really make it work.
Yeah, be a writer.
Yeah, no one breaks up with, well, everyone breaks up with the writer, but if you're
no, but no one bothered, like, if you want to be in the entertainment industry but you're not like someone that's like, I want fame and fortune, like, be a writer.
Yeah,
no one knows who the fuck you are.
Yeah, you make money, you get to go to cool parties, and the only people who know who you are people that you want to know who you are.
Yep.
So that's it for me. Brian.
Alrighty, let's do a Disney update. Watched Incredibles 2.
Dude, so did I. Holy shit, that's so
delightful.
Weird.
I enjoyed it.
I loved it.
It was on, yeah, man, it was on Netflix. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really good. I mean, I don't think it was better than Incredibles 1. But watching it, I remember when last year when I went on my Disney trip, I'm super close with my supervisor. We just kind of bust balls and talk movies, and I was going to get him a mug. So I texted his wife. I was like, ask Tony what his favorite, Disney movie is. And he said Incredibles to her. And I was like, whose favorite Disney movie is Incredibles? And then watching Incredibles 2, I realized how great Incredibles is. I still think it's weird to be your favorite, but like, Great movie.
And I think that Incredibles 2, I do think that the first Incredibles is a better movie, but I think Incredibles 2 has a way better villain. Like, I love the Screenslaver.
Yeah, I love the red herring of, like, figuring out the movie. Because, like, when you first watch it, you're like, okay, Disney films are predictable, and you're completely certain that it's the brother. Like, you're ready that that's going to be the game.
Well, I mean, he's voiced by Bob Odenkirk, which is just, like, the perfect villain. Nice guy who's going to go crazy.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that kind of sucks. I already figured it out. And then once they caught the bad guy so quickly, I was like, okay, it's definitely coming. And then it's a curveball.
I also just like, I like that the Screenslaver does that thing that all good villains should do, which is, like, they have a point. Like, you know what I mean? Like, when you're watching a villain and you're hearing their plan and you're like, yeah, but is she wrong? Are we too obsessed with the screen? Are we too obsessed with this stuff? Like, I love that Disney, of all people, aren't afraid to, like, do a movie that addresses that shit. Cause usually I think it's the divide between Disney and Pixar's. I'm not sure if you've seen any of the Pixar shorts that have come out, but, like, they just put out a short called Kitbull. And it's the story of a stray cat who befriends an abused pit bull that's being forced into dogfighting. And it's fucking heavy to watch. Yeah. Like, it's heavy. And Pixar does not shy away from any of that shit, where they're just like, yeah, the world's fucked up and there's fucked up things that happen. And, like, you either become part of the problem or you make it a point to, like, rise above it and try to change.
Yeah, I mean, just look at it. I think that that's the right thing to do. I mean, we tried with the pretending like shit doesn't exist, and we raised the generation of people that genuinely, like, believe that bad shit doesn't exist. You know,
are you referring to anti-vaxxers?
We're just like, racism's been dead for 100 years. Well, what do you explain this? That's fake news. Show me the real news. So let's address it.
So
I'm with you, Pixar.
I gotta say something about Incredibles versus Incredibles 2. And it's been a long time since I've seen Incredibles. I think I watched it twice the year it came out, and I haven't watched it since. I mean, it's a great film. It's just not something I've gone back to. I really liked, in Incredibles 2, I felt like it was what we need, in my opinion, and I understand that Pixar probably understands this too. What we need is more movies in general that don't talk down to the audience. I think that people have that the desire to have the biggest possible swath of audience enjoyment and participation has led to a dumbing down of film. And I know this is a little heavy to bring up on a comedy show, but I really liked how in Incredibles 2, when Elastigirl and the sister are talking, they're talking like real adults. You know, and it just, yeah. I liked that a lot. I would like there to be more movies where I'm like, okay, this is intelligent conversation, because Elastigirl's smart and the sister is a fucking tech genius.
Yeah.
It wasn't like jokes for adults. It was just two characters speaking like intelligent adults.
And I feel like Walt Disney and Jim Henson, and then if you just kind of follow that trail after them, anyone that, like, followed in those footsteps are really the center of, like, kids movies that do that like don't dumb it down, that will make it for children and for audiences. Now, obviously, if it's a straight made for children's, they're not going to have super intelligent conversations. But for the most part, I feel like all of them do a really good job.
Well, I just mean, yes, I would agree that most Pixar movies, I don't know if it's the conversation, but I think that the themes are there, you know, like Up or fucking anything, you know, but I just really liked the fact that I was watching two characters speak intelligently, and it was just character development. It wasn't exposition. I mean, I guess at the end of the day, it was exposition, because that's what character development is in a perfect world. But I just really liked that, and I would like there to be more movies that aren't catering to the lowest common denominator, because that's going to make people not smarter. You know, I think we need pop culture to force people to think. Use your fucking brain a little bit.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, so Scott, do you have anything else you want to talk about besides The Incredibles 2?
Oh, yeah, I have more.
Yeah, let's
go. So am I, is it, Brian, are you done?
I watched Princess and the Frog, too. It was a good movie. Yeah, that's it.
I like Princess and the Frog. I think that it's underappreciated as a Disney cartoon.
All right, so I will mention one thing real quick, because we've only gotten two episodes in. Megan and I started watching Umbrella Academy two nights ago. It's visually good. I think the pacing's a little slow for a superhero show. That's about all I can say. I like it so far. Have you guys started it at all?
No.
It's basically X-Men. Man.
Yeah, I've never even really got into the Umbrella Academy comics. And, like, I love My Chemical Romance, but I don't know. I don't have any faith in, like, pop punk guys making comic books but for some reason.
Sean's a fucking D&D nerd, man. Always has been.
Yeah, I mean, I love, listen, I said it online maybe 2 weeks ago, like, I'd be all about if they were like, hey, let's make a My Chemical Romance musical. Like,
that'd be great, fucking go.
Like their music is so cinematic and like over the top anyway. Like, give me Black Parade on stage, you know, like, and just throw Helena at the end or something. But like,
I don't understand why everybody likes Black Parade more than Three Cheers, because Three Cheers is a perfect fucking record.
Well, no. My argument would be that Black Parade already has like the story.
Yeah, gotcha.
Like,
but
the thing
like,
is it's already written
not,
as a story.
It would be a much more interesting stage show to do Three Cheers, because it's about two souls that are damned to not be together through the ages. I think that'd be fantastic.
I mean, find a way to smash both of them together. I just think that Welcome to the Black Parade is such a banger of a song that, like, hearing a musical version of it, I'd be like, fuck yes. like, I love that song. All right, but
so Umbrella Academy so is Umbrella good Parade. Enough so far. It's not
Umbrella Parade.
Megan. I think Megan likes it more than I do. Actually, she's more emotionally invested, and I just want to see the powers. You know, it's just a little slow. It's basically filling in the gap for me until Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. comes back for season 6 in May. So I watched 3 horror movies in a 24-hour period. Not for the show, thinking that they would be possible good episodes. Well, two of them.
Okay.
Nightmare Sisters from 1988, starring Linnea Quigley and a couple other naked ladies. quite possibly one of the worst horror movies I've watched, like low effort schlock exploitation horror movies that just had nothing going for it. It has one thing going for it. Linnea Quigley doing this. Have you guys seen it?
No.
Okay, it's not worth watching. It's basically like they filmed this movie over the course of two nights. It's so they obviously gave them the script as they were doing the scenes, and they were like, okay, one take. And they must have spent like $1,000 on the film. It's really very cheap. And it has no valid storyline, but there's some nudity, but it's not sexy. And then there is a really cool scene where Linnea does she like lip syncs this punk song. It's pretty fun, but that's really, I mean, just watch that on YouTube, and that's really all that you need to watch. So that was a real big disappointment. Luckily I didn't pay for it, so there's that. Then I finally watched Happy Death Day, because I'm gearing up to watch Happy Death Day to you. And I enjoyed it.
It's a really fun. It's not that much of a horror movie. It's definitely more of a teen flick that has a horror vibe to it. But I really like that movie, and I think that the lead actress is just adorable.
You know, I like her, but I always have a hard time with movies where somebody's supposed to play an asshole. You know, I mean, she does have a character arc, and she gets better, but still,
that's what I mean. Her the second half of the movie is absolutely adorable.
Yeah,
she is infuriating the first half of that movie.
Well, and I think the thing about it is that the conceit of a movie like that, or Groundhog Day, or, you know, where it's like they have to basically they're playing the same level over and over again, and they have to finally beat it. It's hard for me to watch because I see the progression and I get it. I get it. You know, like, I would like to see somebody. I'm hoping that Happy Death Day to You kind of passes over some of those tropes in and makes it a little bit better pacing, because I always have a hard time with the pacing of films like that.
So I will say, because that was going to be the next thing I talked about, saw Happy Death Day to You, It's not better than the original, but it's still a lot of fun. They do a thing that some people are going to hate. I loved is that they explain how the time loop happened. And the plot line is basically tied around having to close that loop, but it also toys with alternate dimensions now.
See, that does it for me. I want the explanation.
So it's a fun explanation, and because they use alternate dimensions, it actually has like one or two really well done, touching, dramatic moments that like I didn't expect when I went to see it. So I walked away really, really happy with that movie. I don't think it'll be my favorite film of the year. I don't think it'll be in my top 10, but it's a good one that I will look forward to watching to multiple times when it comes out on DVD. And trying to find little Easter eggs of like, oh, this is this implies this and blah, blah, blah.
Here's the one thing I want to say, and then I have one last thing and then I'm done. So about Happy Death Day, I knew going into it, because the movie is a year old, I knew who the killer was, and I was like, okay, I wonder how they're going to get to it. But then I was like, wait, are there two killers? Because of the serial killer that killed her mom. And and don't say anything because I don't want to have anything ruined for Happy Death Day to you, but my best rewrite of the Happy Death Day script would have been that the serial killer had created the time loop so that he could torture the daughter of someone he killed. Like, I think that would have been a really great, you know, instead of him being like a patsy, I would have loved it if that was actually what it was.
All right.
So, I mean, that's, I have no skills or money to make a film, but, you know, that's what I would do if some pleb like me was allowed to take the reins of a, you know, $20 million film. And then I watched All Cheerleaders Die finally. It's a Lucky McKee film. Lucky McKee did one of my top five favorite horror movies of all time, May. And it is very campy and not very good. I don't love it.
All right. Yeah, I didn't love his movie, The Woman.
I refused to watch it. Like,
I feel like Adam McKee is kind of lucky. Like, it's May and that's it. You know what I mean?
Well, he also did. The weird thing about Lucky McKee is that he did May, which is such a fucking good movie. And then he did the gender bent reverse called Roman, which is really, really boring. It has none of the charm of May. And then he did like, the fuck is that? It's like that 60s school in England, The Woods or something like that.
I guess. Yeah.
And that was a real disappointment.
Yeah, I think that he was one of those guys who started off strong and then it just kind of fizzled.
Yeah, I doubt he'd ever listen to this show, but I want to know what that magic formula was for May, because he's worked with Angela Bettis in other films. Did he also do the Carrie remake?
I don't think he did the Carrie
remake. Oh, no, she did it. Angela Bettis, I believe, directed that and starred in it.
No, it was, fuck. No, it was, God, he made a bunch of TV shows that never lasted more than a season. Wonder Falls, he did Hannibal, he did...
Bryan Singer?
Not Bryan Singer.
Bryan Fuller.
Bryan Fuller did the Carrie... Yeah, wow, he did the Carrie...
TV movie.
Because it was supposed to spin into a TV show, I think was the plan, and it bombed so badly that they never...
Also, why did he...
Poor guy still trying, man.
But Brian, the thing about Bryan Fuller is that he makes really good TV. Really good TV.
He does.
I wanted that...
He just makes good TV that not enough people watch.
Well, he got, what, 3 seasons out of Hannibal?
Yeah, Hannibal was his most successful.
Yeah, and it's critically acclaimed. Some of the best... I mean, I've never watched it. I want to. I just haven't gotten around to it because it's not streaming that I know of currently. But... You know, Brian Pushing Daisies would have finished the second season. It was critically acclaimed. It was such a wonderful show. The writer's strike just totally fucked it. So, you know, that's what happened with Pushing Daisies. And then they were going to do that 666, the Munsters remake, right?
Yeah. It was 66 Mockingjay Lane, like whatever their Mockingbird Lane. Mockingbird Lane was the name of the show that he was writing.
Yeah, and I liked they only did the pilot. I liked the pilot well enough. If they would have been able to flesh out those characters, and Brian Fuller would have been able to do his kind of, you know, he's got like a little Tim Burton-esque thing, but Tim Burton that with the sense to fucking pull it down a couple pegs.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, because I love, like, oh, Dead Like Me, right? I think Dead Like Me is so good, and then they did the movie without his writing and his consent and, like, half the cast, and it's so bad. It's such a bad send-off to what was a really good creative show. Yeah, that's upsetting. But, yeah, he wrote the Carrie TV movie or whatever. So I'm going to just cram a bunch of these together, because you said that was it for your list.
Yeah, that's everything I had.
Brian, do you have any more left?
Yeah, I have a few.
All right, I'll split this into two pieces then. So I am trying to see all of the movies that are nominated for Best Picture for the Oscars that I haven't seen, and B, I like dumb action movies. So I saw Cold Pursuit starring Liam Neeson, which was
the one where he's in a truck.
He's a plow. Yeah, he's a plowman. It is so much fun. It makes no sense that I like this movie as much as I do, but it's. The way I described it was like if Wes Anderson directed a Death Wish movie. So it's got
what the fuck?
it's got the premise of a Death Wish movie, but it's got the comedic timing of like Rushmore and the Royal Tenenbaums, where
that's really weird, man.
It's really weird, and like the crowd doesn't know how to, like there's a scene where it's just a close up of a dog taking a shit.
What?
There's like a scene where this sets like what the comedic tone is in the movie is when they go to see their son who's killed in the first 2 minutes of the movie before you have any emotional attachment to him. They have to identify the body in the morgue, and they play it up for laughs for some reason by having them standing in the morgue and the mortician is slowly cranking the body up on like the little thing. But it's just complete silence except for just like the noise as like the thing's cranking up slowly.
Hell?
And it's like, it's so strange. It's the strangest movie I've watched in a long time. But I was like, I went into it like, this is going to be so bad, but like, I'm going to have fun. And I was like, that movie was like Fargo. Like, it was just like, we're a violent, ridiculous movie that also is not taking itself seriously at all. And you shouldn't have an emotional attachment to anybody and just like enjoy it. Of the Oscar movies that I saw, I still have to see Vice, but beyond that, I've seen all of the movies that were nominated. I saw Green Book last night and it was good. I think it has a good chance of winning because it, you know, ticks a lot of boxes, but it's problematic. Problematic in the way of it's a movie about a black musician in the 60s that needs his Italian driver to introduce him to fried chicken and Motown music. Insulting. But I think that the people who vote will be like, yeah, see, racism isn't so bad, like, and then vote for it. But the movie that should win, and Scott, you will hate this movie, and Brian, you will probably like this movie, is The Favorite, from the guy who did Killing of a Sacred Deer and Lobster.
I hated Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yeah, this I think you'd like more, because okay. it's more played for laughs than anything. It's just a really fucking weird movie about a lesbian love triangle between the queen and like two people vying for her power. So it's got like a Game of Thrones vibe, but it like does these weird things where like there'll be like classical music playing and they'll be at a dance, but like they're doing hip hop dancing to the classical music. Like, it's very weird. Juxtaposition throughout
this.
It yeah, oh, you would despise it, Scott. Like the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, this might be one of my favorite movies of 2018. Scott will hate it. Like,
yeah,
like I could just tell. But I was like, but Brian might be charmed by it. Maybe I could also, like, it's one of those movies where I could see people absolutely loving it or despising it, and both opinions are correct. Those are where I'm at. I got to watch Vice tonight, and then I'll probably have my final feelings. But everything I'm hearing is that Vice is some good performances in an okay movie. But all right, Brian, you do your last few, and then I'll wrap up mine.
Okay, I'll do these. So I'll take that out. So now I'll just go through the four. Watched The Ritual finally. Really enjoyed it.
Okay.
Thought it was a good little horror movie. Not much to talk about because I'm a year late and everyone else has already seen it.
I still haven't seen it, so I'll check it out then.
Yeah, it's good. Sharp Objects. Still not sure how I feel about it. Either really good or pretty dumb. It's a Blumhouse show on HBO, starring, what the hell's her name? Amy Adams.
Amy Adams.
I'll say this. I don't know how I feel about the show, but I do know that Amy Adams' performance was fucking incredible, and I loved it. Polar, I watched, which is an over-the-top action film. Matt, you would probably really enjoy it. It's very Guy Ritchie crank, like, combined. My only quarrel with it is there is a dead dog that serves no purpose being a dead dog. Being in a movie, I mean. Like, at least John Wick, that's the whole basis of the movie. There's just a dog getting killed for no reason. And I think that it was done for comedic value, which makes me dislike it even more. But the rest of the movie was great. And then Velvet Buzzsaw.
Oh,
this is the movie. This is the movie of 2019. This is my slice. This is a movie that everyone will absolutely hate. And I absolutely adored.
I know Jade hated it, right?
Jade despised it.
I saw on Instagram she just had a picture of the closing credits and said, well, that was a waste of my night.
Yeah. She hated it. I loved it. First of all, I love any fuck you to like the arrogant art culture.
You just don't understand art, man.
Yeah, like that. It's that. It's just shitting on those like type of people, you know? I don't know, man. I don't know how either of you would feel about it, but I strongly suggest both of you watch it. I fucking loved it. Once you watch it, I can talk about a specific death that I loved. But I'm going to close the Velvet Buzzsaw. Fucking big fan.
All right. So I've got a few things that I want to just quickly mention. Went and saw Punchline, hung out with Punchline, saw Punchline the other week. If you haven't picked up their album Lion, you absolutely should. It's their best album in years. It's so good. And I saw a band that opened for them called the Big Fat Meanies that were absolutely delightful. They were like prog rock ska. And I got to hang out and talk with them backstage. They're really cool people. I think they even listen to the show now. So thanks for listening, specifically Zach, who I talked to forever about how great A New Hope is. I finally bit the bullet and started watching RuPaul's Drag Race, and I am obsessed. Rock through season 6, big fan of Bianca Del Rio. Season 1, not so great. Season 2, I'm still angry at the fact that Tyra Sanchez won that. Just the most infuriating person I can possibly imagine. Should not have been in the final 3, shouldn't have been in the final 10. She was trash and somehow won. It should have been Raven. I believe that in my heart. And I got to talk about the cultural phenomenon, the current cultural phenomenon. Brian said that he's already had it ruined for him. So I'm going to talk about Abducted in Plain Sight. Scott, I know you haven't watched it.
I'm not going to watch it. Megan will probably watch it.
And I know you're not going to watch it. So here's the thing. I'm going to tell you what happens in this movie, and I'm telling you this now so that people who are listening who want to watch it can stop listening. That's why I saved it for last, because I just want to hear your reaction to a piece of this.
I guess you're directing this towards Scott, right?
Yeah, because I know that you said Jade already ruined it for you.
Yeah, she told me everything.
Yeah, so Abducted in Plain Sight is about how this next-door neighbor, it starts off with just telling you that this next-door neighbor, this family friend, kidnaps their 12-year-old daughter, and it feels like it's just a cut-and-dry, like, kidnapping story. And then they jump 3 years back in time, and this movie should just be called The World's Worst Parents, because he basically was planning on doing this for years, and his way of being able to just kidnap their daughter without them pressing charges was that he decided to seduce the mom and then blackmail her. But then he also seduced the father and blackmailed him. Yeah. So there's this scene, and he's become a meme now. Is he's like, yeah, you know, I knew that he was not really happy in his marriage, and we were driving together, just two friends. And he was saying, like, man, I never have sex with my wife. I just want some relief. Can you give me some relief, Bob? And, you know, I wanted to be a good friend, so I reached over and I gave him some relief.
What?
And it's at that point where you're just like, is this a parody? This can't be real. This can't be a real person.
Is that how that guy actually, like...
That's how he words it.
In the interview?
And, like, now there's... Now there's just a bunch of pictures of him because he has, like, a shrug in the movie. So people have taken, like, that picture of him doing a shrug. And it's like, when your friend wants relief. like he's so nonplus about it. And then just it's so increasingly more insane. And, like, it's awful what happened to this girl. But she's okay. Like, she managed to, like, make something out of her life. She wrote a book and is now, like, an actress who appears in, like, Iron Man 3. And she's in Maniac. And she's in a bunch of movies. But just, like, you're watching it. And the overarching thing that they keep pointing out is, like, this was 1976. No one knew what a pedophile was. No one knew what a child molester was. Like, that was so out of, like, people's brains as a possibility that, like, when she's just gone for 5 days, like, I don't know, maybe they just went off to hang out and lost track of time. Like, I don't know. Like, but it is insane. I heard one podcaster say, I had to watch it twice in a row just so that my brain could actually accept that what was happening actually happened, because it seems so outrageous. So take a chance and watch it. But yeah, I just wanted to hear Scott's reaction to the Need Some Relief, because I'm going to be asking for that a whole lot at Monster Mania.
This is just a rehash of the bro job meme. Choo choo. Yeah,
it's the friendship test from the Tenacious D CD.
So, have I ever told you guys on air about Bro Job, the parody metal band?
No, no. But that's a great name.
It's exactly what you think it is. It's like metal, like metalcore, you know, kind of like hardcore and breakdowns and metal, death metal tropes. It's like a deathcore, fake deathcore band. And they have songs like Talk Shit, Get Kissed, and We Are the Boyfriend Stealers and stuff like that. So it's all like basically giving the middle finger to all the hyper masculinity and hardcore and death metal and like the deathcore scenes. And there's just a great line in Talk Shit, Get Kissed, where he goes, if there's one thing in life I've learned is how to take a load.
So Brian, just throwing this out there, was there anything else important that happened in February that you want to talk about?
I tricked my girlfriend into becoming my wife.
Well, no, fiance. You got
fiance baby steps here, buddy.
Yeah, like you got. Well, I get to the next.
I didn't say I got married. I'm just saying I tricked her into becoming my wife.
I don't know
by saying yes to the engagement. Yeah. I have no idea either. But
it was a very sweet video that I got.
See the video. Motherfucker posted fucking screen caps.
Because he couldn't center his phone properly.
And first of all, if you saw by the screen caps, you guys are lucky I even put screen caps up, because I was like, man, I've been putting on some weight. Let me get a striped sweater so I look slimmer. But I forgot that's vertical. And I got a horizontal striped sweater, which just made me... I looked like one of the twins in Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland.
So I want to say one thing about the video.
Some tears were shed most in mine.
Well, no. So we all know that Brian is like super hyper anxious. My favorite moment in the video, I mean, the whole family teared up at points while watching it, but he asks her to be his wife. She starts crying and she's crying and she's crying, and he starts to consult her. And then it's like 45 seconds of her crying. And then he just goes, so is that a yes? And it's so genuinely like, I don't know if she's...
Dude, I've been there. I've been there. When I proposed to Megan, she knew it was going to happen. And she said, are you really doing this right now? And I was like, fuck, abort, abort. Because I thought that she was like going to say no, but she just was shocked that it was happening at that point. So like, that's... Oh, man, I feel for you, Bri.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Brian. Looking forward to the next year of our family driving you crazy, and you know, it'll be a good time regardless.
Well, and Megan is excited because she said HMN Wives Club.
Yeah.
Don't worry, Matt, your wife who can... Yeah, yeah. You ever see Lars and the Real Girl?
I was gonna say this is South Park with Jennifer Lopez, but sure, that works. Oh, Ben. Taco flavor, Keithy.
Goddamn. See, like, I can get...
Why am I doing that with my hand? I'm doing it with my hand while I'm saying it.
Oh, see, you guys are always like, oh, Scott, you've probably never seen this South Park.
Oh, you can't you avoid
found the
taco
one
flavor kisses.
South Park that I know.
I mean, that one was a classic. All right, well, guys, we'll be back next month with more of this. But this is the last thing that we're recording before Monster Mania, so... Guys, Monster Mania, it's happening. It's going to be a blast. You should be there. We've got new shirts coming out from Studio House Designs, which is super cool of them. We've got tote bags now. We've got enamel pins. Our buddy Kyle's going to be hanging out at the booth with us.
Kyle from Survival of the Film Freaks.
Survival of the Film Freaks. He's going to be Kyle from Horror Finds, who's going to bring some of his Horror Finds merch out to sell. Scott, you're going to have a new album out by then. We're going to finally hang out with the guys from Fright School. We're going to be hanging out with the Jersey Ghouls. We're going to be hanging out with our boy Dylan, Sean from Cassettes.
Allison.
It's just going to be a whole crew hangout. It's going to be so much fun. We're going to be recording episodes in our hotel room, but I'm going to have an open door policy. If people want to come and hang out while we're recording, you might get to have some special guests pop up on the mic as we record all those episodes. So it's going to be a fun fucking weekend. You should be there.
New Jersey, Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Come check it out. It's going to be a blast. And then, you know, we've got an episode coming out on Friday, so look forward to that.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.